thoroughly depressed watching the Super Bowl. I actually realized that I would have been very conflicted if the Packers had won against the Giants, and then I probably would have rooted for both in the course of a game. My Packers friends on the right, my Patriots friends on the left, and going back and forth. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I'm going on my year and a half anniversary here in Madison, and what I thought I would do, just to put Neil's question in context, is to start with why I came to Madison in the first place, because it is relevant to the notion of healthcare opportunities for Madison and where I think the industry is going and where I think Madison is going in particular. And then I want to spend quite a bit of time talking about the state of the state, I guess, of healthcare from my perspective, as much nationally as it is regionally, and then certainly take any questions that you may have. I actually came to Madison for the weather, of course.
Didn't we all?
I came to Madison, frankly, because it's a very unique marketplace here from a healthcare perspective relative to many other marketplaces where I've worked, where I've been, where I've consulted, where I've spoken. I speak quite a bit nationally with medical groups about the need for fixing a broken healthcare industry and for transformation of healthcare. And Madison is a very unique place. Madison, as you know very well, is comprised of four major integrated delivery systems, the Dean system being a partnership between Dean Health System, St. Mary's Hospital, Dean Health Plan, and SMDV, which is our rural physician network, which spans nearly 20 counties. And there are four systems like that. Dean is just one. Group Health, Meritor, and UW are the other three. And frankly, that is what makes the market unique. There are very few markets that have integrated delivery systems like that, even one of them. But to find a market where there are four and they represent the dominant market share in this city is very unique. And what was so attractive to me about a market of integrated delivery systems is I truly believe that as healthcare changes and as healthcare transforms the way that I really think it needs to, that integrated delivery systems will be the one that will demonstrate greater value to consumers. Better service, better quality, lower cost, and we're actually beginning to see differences in performance when we look at the quality of multi-specialty group practice versus unintegrated physician groups. The quality is relatively higher in the former than it is in the latter. Likewise, when we begin to even look at cost differences between Madison and Milwaukee, we see that the cost of care in Madison is lower than the cost of care in Milwaukee. And the question is how much of that has to do with the lack of real integration in the Milwaukee market and the state of integration in the Madison market. So I start by saying that I came to Madison because if I truly was going to have the opportunity to create the first great healthcare company, Madison is the place. There are very few other markets that would offer an opportunity that we have here in Madison, and that's what brought me here. So I know I've steered clear of your question thus far, so I'm going to go into it right now.
Nice job.
when I talk about the first great healthcare company, it really speaks to some passions I have about healthcare, or my impressions of the current state of healthcare. I've spoken in other groups, and I'm usually a bit more harsh when I speak in front of other doctors about healthcare. But the bottom line is I really think that healthcare is a broken industry. In any of a number of the things that we do, we are broken as an industry. And I want to highlight a few things that really are tantamount that support that notion. The first is the notion of providing high quality care, high service care to our patients. I'm going to start with service because it's one of the things that I'm most passionate about. I'm finding as I get older and I get a bit more ornery and a bit more particular about service, that I'm very intolerant of a poor service experience in any industry. And I'm sure that this is true for many of you. And as I began my management career, I formed this impression as I was fielding complaint after complaint after complaint from patient about our service. I formed this notion that healthcare to me seems to be the only service industry that doesn't act like one. That when we think about patient or customer expectations in other industries, you know what you expect from the airline business, the restaurant business, the hotel business. You know what good service palpably feels like and what it doesn't, what bad service also feels like. Well, when we think about what we do to patients every day, we think about six-hour waits in emergency rooms. Or you want to see your doctor for a routine physical, you have to wait 9 months. Or you have a concerning mole on your arm and you want to see a dermatologist. Well, no dermatologist to be found, no accessibility. Or you're calling to speak to a nurse to get advice for your child and you play phone tag all day long and perhaps you'll actually get someone to talk to every day. Or you get your blood drawn and you're waiting for your test results and they never come. Or they come weeks late. And I don't know about all of you, but when I get my blood drawn, I freak out until I get my test results. And if I don't get my test results, I don't presume they're normal, which is what the doctors think we presume. I presume the doctors lost them, because that's the expectation of the healthcare industry. Likewise, I had a personal experience from a service perspective. I'm very, very healthy. I've really only needed to see a doctor once in the last 6 years. I had cervical radiculopathy, which is a pinched nerve in the neck, and I needed to see a neurosurgeon, and I was in a lot of pain. I tried to book an appointment, and I was a healthcare executive, and I tried to book an appointment with a neurosurgeon, and they gave me an appointment 4 months later. And when I said, well, I'm suffering pain, I need to be seen sooner, the nurse on the phone essentially said that I needed to kind of tolerate the pain. That was the answer that I got. So I waited, and I waited the 4 months. What was remarkable, when the day of my appointment came and I went to the neurosurgeon's office, how long would you guess that I waited at the neurosurgeon's office that day? So the amount of time from when I left my home to when I got back home.
More than an hour.
7 hours. And the more pertinent question actually is, how much time did the neurosurgeon spend with me in the exam room? I counted it, because I was so angry by the time I started the stopwatch when he came in. 4 minutes. So I drove home very angry, thinking, okay, I'm a busy executive. My time is valuable too. I began to write in my head the invoice that I would send to the neurosurgeon for my time. And then I thought, well, what if this guy had to operate on me? This probably wouldn't be a very good idea. So I didn't. But that characterizes the service experience that many patients have in healthcare. And frankly, I think it's inexcusable from my perspective. Healthcare should function like a service industry, like any other industry. And healthcare organizations, from my point of view, should compete with other organizations from a service perspective. And from the perspective of being the dean CEO, I'd say, bring it on. We're ready to face that competition. Now, granted, we're not perfect either, but I'd rather for us to be the best of the group than where the industry is today, and be a thought leader that drives the whole industry to get better from a service perspective. The state of quality of care. If you get a bunch of doctors together in a room, and I've been heckled before by physicians. I guess what makes me unique as a physician with an MBA is everyone's worst nightmare, especially to other physicians who don't necessarily want to change. But when you get physicians in a room and you ask, What differentiates you from other doctors? What makes you a great doctor? What doctors will say is, well, I'm a higher quality doctor. I'm a better diagnostician. Clinically, I'm better than all other doctors in this community. Well, I guess I'd ask some questions about that. If we're so high quality, why is it that the healthcare industry's defect rate is so much greater than any other industry? So when I think of clinical quality, I would like to compare ourselves to the airline business, the manufacturing industries, where they measure mistakes. And when you look at healthcare versus other industries, the difference in the defect rate, the error rate, is dramatic. And the statistics that I've heard, for example, is if the airline business had the same error rate as healthcare, two jets would crash every day at O'Hare Airport. 12,000 pieces of mail would get lost per hour in the Postal Service. Now, they may already get lost and we don't know, but I'm assuming that they don't get lost. 12,000. 35,000 bank checks per hour would be drawn from the wrong person's account in the banking industry. And the one that gave me the willies is right within healthcare, that if we had defects in obstetrics and gynecology at the rate of healthcare overall, 20 babies per day would be given to the wrong parents to take home. That is not an acceptable error rate as far as I'm concerned, and there is no reason if the airline business, the manufacturing business, the banking industry, and any other industry can either use technology or process improvement or anything else to reduce mistakes and variations, healthcare should too. And I think we're broken from a quality perspective. We're not as great as we think we are. And then finally, the third part of the value equation, from a cost perspective, we have a problem. Costs are escalating. The percentage of employer budgets, the national budget, out-of-pocket expenses for patients are really rapidly increasing, and it's only getting worse, so that cost is increasing to all of the consumers of healthcare without a recognizable return on investment. So we perhaps as a society could tolerate increases in costs if service and quality were increasing at an equal rate, and maybe we say that healthcare is worth all of this. But if we're not necessarily seeing dramatic improvements in quality or defects, and we're not really seeing dramatic improvements in service, then what are we really paying for as costs increase? So Dean's focus and passion is really bringing the value back into healthcare. We've gone through an enormous amount of change over the course of the last year, but a lot of the changes are really focused on providing better service and better quality at a lower cost. And that requires an enormous amount of change in healthcare and an enormous degree of sophistication. Which leads me to sort of the second set of things that I wanted to say. The first was, I think healthcare is a broken industry that needs to be fixed, and that Dean is going to be one of the first in the country to fix it. The second passion that I have is really about method and process. I'm definitely a process geek. It's really all about, well, if we have a vision to get where we want to be and we know where we are, very specifically, how are we going to get there? There are a lot of healthcare executives who can stand in front of you and talk about better care, better quality, lower cost, but how many actually can execute on it and deliver on it? Which leads to my second passion about healthcare and probably relevant to all of you. I think healthcare is such a tremendous cottage industry that has really been neglectful and ignorant of all of the wonderful things that other industries do to get better. And I'm talking about learning lessons from the best companies of the world. When I finished my residency and finished all my clinical training, I went back to business school saying, well, I'm going to learn about, you know, how wonderful companies work. And I'm going to fix healthcare. That was my passion even back then. And I sat there in business school for 2 years, day after day, hour after hour, listening to all of these case studies of the best companies in the world. How many cases would you say that I heard in 2 years that were about a healthcare company? Zero. What was even a bit more disturbing was when I left business school and I went back to Harvard Community Health Plan, it was at that point, with my toolkit of all of these wonderful tools that I was going to use. And it was so profound that what I saw was that healthcare weren't even using a lot of the tools that I learned from GE and Dell and Nordstrom and Ritz-Carlton and Disney, and it goes on and on. That we were really just buffered and insular about our field. And if you look at actually a lot of doctor's offices throughout the country, many of them work exactly today as they did 40 years ago. And so our passion at Dean and what we've really been focusing on doing is learning the best tools of the best companies and applying them to healthcare and bringing them to the very nature of how we do our work. From heavy investments in technology, to process reengineering, to intensive customer service training for staff and doctors, even though doctors really don't want to do it, to dashboards, metrics, scorecards, behavioral interviewing, performance management, marketing, market research, it goes on and on. What you will find is you'll find some healthcare organizations doing some of those things, but very few healthcare organizations doing them all. And there are some interesting stories about this that highlight the problem. When I was in Massachusetts, the Massachusetts Medical Society, this was back about 5 years ago now, but it shows you how things really are changing. When the Mass Medical Society did a survey of all physicians about technology and asked physicians, how likely is it that you will implement an electronic health record in your lifetime? What percentage of doctors would you guess said never? 5 years ago, 50%. And from my point of view, that would be like the banking industry 20 years ago saying, you know, we don't believe in this whole ATM technology or telephone banking or internet technology for banking. Physicians who essentially said, I'm good with my paper charts, that is adequate. Well, the way to go is intensive use of technology. Whether it's electronic health records, digital radiology, so that people don't have to carry their films from doctor to doctor or from doctor to radiologist to be read, to check-in kiosks at reception like they have in airports that are much more accurate, much more confidential than the system that we have today. So there are clearly some examples, and you can think of hundreds of them, where healthcare is somewhat antiquated and where healthcare has to graduate to the current time in all that we do. So my overarching view of healthcare is that we're broken, but that there is a solution for how we can be fixed, and we're driving a lot of those solutions at Dean. The one other thing that I would say, and I know there'll be questions about it, is, well, how does healthcare change? Does it change through legislative means, mandates, single payer, universal coverage, or other legislative approaches to improving value to the consumer? And my personal perspective is no, that's not the best way to change the industry. the best way to change the industry is to really allow the competition, which is already occurring, to flourish. And for organizations like Dean, and there are many others like us in other markets around the country that are really trying to step ahead of the pack and set an example for others in the marketplace, I would argue that that transformation of healthcare will happen a whole lot faster than healthcare reform legislated by either state or federal governments. Which brings me back to my opening comments. If there's any market that I think can really set an example for healthcare for the nation, it's Madison, Wisconsin. I'm a believer in the integrated model where the incentives, the visions, the goals, the objectives of hospitals, health plans, and physicians that are all aligned are more likely to achieve the vision that I described, better care, better service, lower cost, than markets made up of national for-profit payers with unintegrated physicians that are in private practice and not aligned with hospitals. And I believe that we will begin to see differences, probably even starting between Madison and Milwaukee, and then between organizations like Dean and UW and GHC and Kaiser from all the rest. And over the coming year or two, I would predict that we're going to begin to see differences in those two models. And once we can transparently publish the differences between organizations like ours and organizations that can't be like ours, we'll begin to see evolution of healthcare and transformation of healthcare in the direction that we want. Is that a too long-winded of an answer to your very short question?
Yeah, probably. No, that was great. Thank you. And help me if I'm missing something here. The idea of integrated delivery systems sounds good. I like the sounds of that. I think I understand that. But I mean, what we're talking about here is the only market in the United States, if I'm right, that has all physician-owned healthcare. This is doctor-owned healthcare. And there's something that seems kind of counterintuitive to that. It's like having all farmer-owned grocery stores. I'm not sure I see the incentives here to achieve the kind of service levels and cost savings and everything that you've outlined is necessary under a completely universally physician-owned healthcare. Now, you suggest that there, in a year or two, maybe there are metrics that will be reached that will prove that point. But you know, from where we sit right now, why does that make sense?
Let me tackle it with two different responses. The first is I don't see there's anything wrong with physician-owned healthcare. It's not, physician-owned healthcare does not equate to monopoly. Physician-owned healthcare means that it's putting control in the hands of the people who really can influence a change in healthcare. When we think about all of the costs of healthcare, 90% of all of the costs in healthcare are driven by physicians and physician decision-making. That's where most of the costs come from. So if you want to encourage any party to improve healthcare, it would be physicians. Likewise, I would also argue that the service and quality piece, if you want to improve that, the greatest driver of quality of care and service is the doctor. In my experience, when you look at loyalty, patients are loyal for the most part to their doctors. Second, I'd put hospitals. But patients tend not to be loyal, frankly, to health plans. That patients will find a way to change their health plan to stay with their doctor. And so from my point of view, I don't necessarily see a problem with physician-owned healthcare. Now, the other part of my answer is Dean Health System does not own the whole integrated delivery system. So St. Mary's Hospital is a separate corporation. It's part of the SSM family. So it's not, the hospital's not physician-owned. And I'm not sure I would necessarily even advocate for physician-owned hospitals. I'm not sure that's necessary. What I'm really talking about is integration. That's the piece that matters most. In unintegrated markets, where there is no linkage and no shared governance and no shared ownership of costs or profits, then what you will see, and Massachusetts is a great market to describe. Essentially, every payer contracts with every physician in every hospital. No physicians are owned or integrated with necessarily any, no hospitals are owned or integrated with any physicians in particular. So everyone is essentially in everyone else's network and is contracted with everyone else. Well, what do you expect will happen in that market? Health plans are going to try to maximize their profits. Hospitals are going to try to maximize their profits. And doctors are going to try to maximize their profits. So doctors will try to maximize profits by generating unnecessary services. Frankly, that's the bottom line. Hospitals want to expand the number of patients that are staying in the hospital and would want to maximize their reimbursement. Health plans don't want doctors to generate services and don't want hospitals to have long lengths of stay. So you actually have competing incentives and competing interests of the three major players in the industry. And frankly, at Dean St. Mary's, Dean Health Plan, those disincentives don't exist. We're all on the same platform. So there really is no transfer pricing issues. There is no independent, in essence, profitability of the various entities. The bottom line is our focus is on better care, better quality at a lower cost with all of the internal dynamics gone. And thus I feel that integrated, and frankly that's why I feel that the cost of care in an integrated model is lower than the cost of care in unintegrated systems. Now, there's a downside to integrated models. In this market, when you're part of an integrated model, you know, if you have Dean Health Plan, you typically see a Dean physician and you get admitted to St. Mary's Hospital. In a universal model, you have insurance, and for the most part, you could see any doctor or go to any hospital, but it comes at an extreme cost. And if we as a society want to have our cake and eat it too, it's going to be very difficult to transform healthcare. I think there will need to be ways to allow the segmentation of integrated systems, then really allow everyone in everyone's network. Because frankly, I don't believe that we've tried through multiple historical strategies, managed care, pay for performance, or anything else, to solve the problem of the unaligned incentives of the three major players in the healthcare industry.
Talked about, it sounds like that you're saying that the market can solve everything rather than having any legislative solutions. How is the market, though, going to deal with the uninsured and the people who fall between the cracks?
Well, actually, and I know that Jim Riordan talked about this a little bit as well, Wisconsin's in a very good spot as it pertains to care for the uninsured. So we're third or fourth or so in the country with the lowest number of uninsured. So from an uninsured perspective, we've done quite a good job in really managing different populations. And it's even getting better. So as we think about Badger Care Plus, when we think about Badger Care Choice, which will really be a solution to help smaller employers and perhaps even individuals, then in essence what we're gradually doing is tackling each of the major populations of the uninsured and assure that they're insured, or the underinsured ensure that they're insured. So I think that the solution for managing the uninsured is a bit different than the whole notion of integration, because the integrated parties are taking care of both the uninsured and the insureds today. So if we really think about it, folks who are uninsured in our society still use the healthcare system. And frankly, someone's paying for it. So it's in the form of charity care or free drugs or federal subsidies or state government expense or whatever the case may be. The uninsured are getting healthcare. And I'd even argue getting healthcare in an inefficient way. So when you're uninsured, you probably access healthcare through the most expensive means, the emergency room. I would rather all those people be insured and they would access health care through a primary care physician or urgent care or specialists, a whole lot less expensive, or getting preventive care instead of acute care, which would also certainly be more efficient, less expensive. So I actually think we're on a very good path to solving the uninsured problem here in Wisconsin. In fact, I serve on the United Way board, and I'm the vice chair of the Healthy for Life Agenda for Change Committee, which is really focused on the uninsured as one of our areas of charitable donation. And some of you may know that all of the major healthcare leaders in Madison met to develop a pilot to try to solve the uninsured problem. And we're actually discussing whether we possibly would need to disband the pilot, because many of the populations that we would attempt to serve through the pilot are now going to be served essentially through BadgerCare Plus. So that's a good reason to stop a project, that our clientele really no longer needs us. So from a perspective on the short, I think that we're doing very well as a state.
Craig, you say you know what good service looks like, and I think you really did a good job outlining some of the challenges there. But if I hear you right, then I mean what you would like to see a great healthcare company do is you would get in to see a dermatologist when you need to see one. You would be able to get a physical within a very short period of time. You'd get your test results back, you know, in a couple of hours. So, I mean, reducing the error rate, I can understand. But will you have benchmarks? I mean, are there measures that will determine in these cases? Because these seem tough to accomplish, frankly. I mean, it's
benchmarks for service improvement.
Yeah.
There are many benchmarks. I mean, we can measure it both objectively and subjectively, and we measure them all. So we actually now have a metrics Bible, in essence, at Dean, where we're tracking things like time to answer the telephone, abandonment rates, you know, the same thing that all other industries really do check. Time to appointments. So how often does a patient get an appointment in the time frame that they want? When is the next available appointment for each doctor within our organization for treating any condition? It's a bit harder to actually measure the length of time waiting in a waiting room and waiting in an exam room unless we put barcodes on people, and I'm not sure that would be very popular, so we probably wouldn't do that. But we can get at that subjectively through satisfaction surveys, and we conduct thousands and thousands of surveys every year to try to get impressions on how we're doing from a service improvement perspective. But those are the exact things that we're trying to do.
To reduce the time to get a physical from 7 months to a month, is that how many more doctors, or how much shorter time allotted to a physical, or, you know, what are the factors?
Let me start with what we did at Fallin Clinic, which is where I was before I came to Dean. We implemented an initiative called Advanced Access, which was really our effort to improve access, and we did exactly that. Many of our physicians in both primary care and specialties had multi-month waits for appointments. Primary care was 9 months. Within the course of 6 months, with the addition of no more physicians or staff, every primary care physician could see their patients for a routine physical same day. And the magic, there really is no magic to it, the magic is using process improvement. Physicians are incredibly inefficient, for the most part, in the way they manage patients and the way they manage schedules. And all we needed to do was to look at manufacturing and queuing theory in other industries and realize that we were creating the bottlenecks ourselves. And whether it's very selective or specific scheduling, I'm only going to see a new patient on such and such a day at such and such a time, we have created the problem ourselves, and patients started waiting. And so we began to develop these very long queues. But what was happening on a same-day basis is all of these patients who had booked appointments 9 months ago forgot, or the issue was no longer relevant. So here are doctors that essentially had an open schedule because lots of people didn't show up today. But when we added new patients to the schedule, they would go to the end of the line. So we solved that problem very simply by eliminating, I don't want to get too technical, but eliminating the numbers of appointment lengths, appointment types, trying to see as many people today that needed services today as opposed to putting them to the end of the line. And over the course of 6 months, all of these backlogs went away. There are sufficient doctors in the system to achieve the levels of access that all practices, all communities want, with some exceptions. There are some shortages in certain specialties. But for the most part, just through effective application of business tools to healthcare delivery, we can solve our access problems.
Here at Dean, have you been able to do similar things in your time, or are you dissatisfied with the amount of time it takes to get an appointment or see a physician or have a procedure done?
You ask my team, I'm never really satisfied. We can always do better. And we've made some progress. We've piloted advanced access. We've piloted it successfully. We want to roll it out to all specialties, all physicians, all disciplines. We really want to underscore to the physicians why it's so important to have good access and good service. And we've really made some great progress in telephone answering times, in waiting times, in access in some areas. But frankly, what I would say over the course of my tenure thus far is we've really built a foundation for success. We have new leaders who are committed to this vision of service and access, and we've begun to put some of our process improvement tools in place so that over the course of the next few years, we can really deliver on that vision. So I'm happy where we are, but I certainly want us to be better than where we are.
You have questions for Dr. Samet? Joe's going to bring the microphone around so we make sure we get the questions on.
I have a question on cost. A friend of mine who is in a profession that the average income is perhaps $45,000 was told recently by one of their state human resources people that within a few years their health care cost would be equal to the salaries. I don't know that we can tolerate that continuous increase. Perhaps you can help us understand the increasing cost that we continuously have to pass through to our clients, and I happen to sell insurance, so that's why I'm very conscious of that, and I would be interested in your comments on that.
I'm not so sure that costs will escalate at such a rapid rate. I think we have had some, if you look at the healthcare cost cycle, there were some moments in time where we seemed to suppress the healthcare inflation trends. Typically, around election time, we begin to see some suppression in healthcare trends. New strategies by health insurance organizations tend to suppress healthcare trends. So, in terms of the dollar amount, I'm not so sure it will go up at that pace or reach that level. However, I do believe that costs in healthcare are too high. And I would say that they're high for a number of reasons. First, I think there is still way too much waste in healthcare, whether it's administrative costs, marketing costs, overhead costs, inefficient processes. There is an enormous amount of waste, and I would say a significant portion of healthcare costs today could be eliminated if we all went through some of the process improvement exercises that I described. Likewise, I still believe that we are a very much sickness-oriented industry in the United States and not so much a wellness-oriented industry. And I think until we make a successful transition to focus more on prevention than on illness, then we're not going to solve our cost problem. And I don't know how many of you saw the movie Sicko, There were a lot of biases in that movie, but one of the premises that I think is very true is that we need to be more prevention-oriented. And we don't really create a lot of incentives in healthcare to ask our physicians to keep people from getting sick. So if we could come up with an incentive to say, every time your patient gets a new illness or needs to be hospitalized or goes on expensive medications because you didn't prevent something earlier in their life, you are penalized. That's not the way our system works. Or incentive to really keep people as healthy as long as they can before they ever face any illness. I think we need to make that transition. And it's one of the other things that integrated systems can do more than unintegrated systems. Since we own our own health plan, we are very much incented to keep people healthy because the physicians are part of the same system as the financing arm, which is we're going to do the right thing by the patient and we're going to do the things that ultimately will reduce long-term costs, and that is really focusing on prevention. There was an interesting news piece about Virginia Mason Health Center, which is in Washington State, where they were struggling with a significant problem. Virginia Mason is part of an integrated system, but is missing one part of the integration, which is the financing arm. So they have a hospital and a physician group, but they don't have a health plan. So what they found was they found a better way to manage back pain. And what they looked at is they were putting people through all kinds of testing and interventions and high-cost procedures that brought profits to their institution, but that it wasn't helping the patients get any better. They found a better way to do it, which reduced their level of profitability by a huge amount of money. And the health plan wouldn't give them any of the return on that quality improvement decision. So in essence, they were disincented to do right by the patient because the profits would really fall to an outside organization, not to them. And that's sort of an example of how the unaligned healthcare system is driving healthcare costs up, not driving healthcare costs down.
I'm curious, sir.
Sorry.
I'm curious about third-party payers, and if you could, if I could put this question together properly. The integrated system, Dean Health Plan, the Hospital of St. Mary's, and the Dean Physicians, and your ability perhaps to work with cash flow and the reimbursement cycles, I would imagine are improved vis-a-vis when you're at the mercy of reimbursements by the federal government for Medicare and Medicaid, and then how that compares with, say, other markets and other places where there's that huge lag in the cash flow that occurs. And I'd imagine that that's a huge problem that affects the cost of care, is the inability to do that. Because we as consumers, if I get my credit card bill this evening, I got to pay in 10 or 12 days, and I'm going to have a penalty if I don't. I'm going to pay in 30 days on other bills, but there seems to be such huge lag times that occur for reimbursements in healthcare.
I think we're probably better off here in Madison in the integrated systems than, for example, hospitals or medical groups in Milwaukee. We're not fully better off. Nearly 40% or so of Dean physicians' revenues are from Medicare, and it's fee-for-service Medicare. So we're reimbursed. There still is a large percentage of our reimbursements that are reimbursed that way, which is that we don't get the money until really after the service is provided, which is different than an integrated system, which essentially collects a premium dollar, reserves it, and uses the premium dollar when people need it and they get sick. So, yes, there is a favorable cash flow when you're capitated or when you're in an insurance model where you have control or ownership of your insurance company.
And I guess what are those lag times then that you have to wait for reimbursements from Medicare and Medicaid?
They're not exceedingly long. It depends on Medicare D, which is a pharmaceutical program, is a little bit different than a fee-for-service Medicare for clinical services. But, you know, it can range from 30 days to a year. But it's really more on the earlier side of that time frame than the latter. And it can create a significant problem for some groups as it relates to reimbursement. I would argue less so of an issue here in Madison.
Thank you.
Back to the prevention and wellness topic, it seemed to me that that is going to require a major shift in societal thinking beyond just the business model, but it does make sense to me that the integrated model would be best suited to address that. And I guess I'm curious, from your perspective at Dean, if there are initiatives that you can discuss underway to try to incentivize, particularly doctors, to promote wellness over, you know, treating things and additional services.
Our chief medical officer, Dr. Kaufman, who some of you may know, is really leading an initiative this year and next year to take a look at exactly that. And I think the way we would describe it is we really want to blow up and start over with the primary care model. And it's not about reducing the need for primary care. It's actually the other way. It's the thought of enhancing the need of primary care and the role that primary care physicians play. I would rather a primary care physician to spend all of their time focusing on population health and wellness rather than being driven to generate appointments every 5 minutes, which is their tendency will be, I'm going to be a triage vehicle. So nowadays, because of the typical reimbursement models that exist for primary care physicians, and primary care physicians tend to be reimbursed the lowest, the way that they actually make sufficient income is they generate more services. And so they're not as likely to be as thorough in their visits, and they're more likely to say, okay, well, you have these five problems, I'll send you to these five specialists, which just drive up the cost of healthcare. They can care for those five problems, but the current methodology really incents them to see more people and have the responsibility for those services provided by others. So the question is how do we redesign the primary care model so that primary care physicians are really managing population health, complex preventive issues, as opposed to doing very simple, basic triage work or primary care from that perspective. So we are going to pilot a bunch of initiatives either later this year or early next year to try a new way of doing this. And again, we have the luxury of doing it within our organization. We don't have to worry about the ramifications of reimbursement. We're going to try new things and see if the new model will generate better care, better quality, better service at a lower cost than even the existing model we have at Dean.
Kay, and then Phil, and then we'll probably have to wrap it up.
You've been very convincing about the value of integrated systems. I appreciate that. I'm an economist by training, and I just want to talk to you about your comments about competition is good. My observation is that when there's pure competition between systems, that we get a lot of excess capacity in the system that oftentimes leads to higher charges or unnecessary procedures. And we can all see all the building that has been going on in Madison to make each system more competitive. But if competition really is the answer, shouldn't it be at the doctor level where individual doctors can compete based upon the quality of their care? By having four systems do all of the pricing and in the marketplace, you essentially have an oligopoly in this community. Fortunately, we have strong buyers with the government and the alliance, but it just seems that this whole issue of competition, that the normal rules that exist in a market don't exist here, and we have to find some different solutions that involve competition, but also enough collaboration that we're not creating a structure that's too costly for our community.
I mean, I think it would be wonderful to really allow doctors to be the unit of competition. But the problem is that the health system is so complex, it's not just about doctors. So if we were to actually set physicians as the only unit of competition, well, what about the hospitals and how does that work? So would any physician essentially be able to use any hospital? And then what do we do from a payer perspective, as long as the payers are separate and distinct? How do we create a payer model? There are not a lot of people who are in support of single payer. I think people are in support of universal health care and really allowing the value of the existing payers to remain. So I'd love to explore how a model like that would work. However, I still do believe, I don't believe we have an oligopoly. I do still believe that we're going to see change right here within Madison. And part of it is we've really rested on our laurels and not addressed the issues that need to be fixed. But I can assure you that Dean, I don't know about the other organizations, but Dean is certainly going to drive a lot of competition in the marketplace. And where we're going to see it is when we begin to transparently demonstrate that our service is better, our quality is better, and we start lowering our costs or holding our costs flat while other people are raising them, then the entire market will be forced to compete. I don't think the market is really resting on their laurels. I think there's an enormous amount of competition in this market.
Phil?
Yes, thank you. You talked a great deal about access and quality of service. About 35 years ago, my immediate family moved to Canada, and I remember very vividly my mother's last years and the struggles with the Canadian health system. There are proposals both in Wisconsin and nationally to create universal systems. How would these impact access and quality of service, in your view?
Well, the primary driver of a universal system, as I can see it, is to solve the problem of the uninsured. And so things like Healthy Wisconsin and other proposals that have been pitched really aim to assure that everyone in Wisconsin is insured. As we talked about earlier, I'm not so sure how critical that is, because we're making progress to resolve the uninsured problem in other ways. It would be like to redesign the entire model to solve a problem which is 2%, but it means restructuring the other 98% that may work very well, doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense to me, especially if the cost of the redesigned model is a whole lot more than the existing model. We may have solved the uninsured problem, but we may have significantly increased the cost of healthcare, and God knows what we would do to accessibility or service. Hard to predict. But I would argue that we should solve the uninsured problem the way that we are currently on a path to do so, which is to segment the uninsured population and really provide insurance for each that are uninsured, and allow the competition to flourish to improve the value of the product among the four major health systems in Madison. So I wouldn't necessarily be an advocate in really taking the current system and redesigning the whole thing.
Craig, thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Again, our next Business Leaders Forum is next Monday with Commerce Secretary Jack Fisher. And then in March, we've got the Dean of the Edgewood Business School, Dr. Charles Taylor, joining us. And in April, the CEO of the Wisconsin Alumni Association, Paula Bonner, is going to be our Business Leader Forum guest. So we invite you all to join us again. Thanks for coming today, and drive safe.